Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Newsweek's Foreign Service. I'm Miren Gitter.
And I'm Josh Lowe.
And each week we take a look at the big stories in the US and what they mean for the rest of the world.
This week, we're taking a look at Donald Trump's promises. Can he keep them? He promised all sorts of stuff during the election campaign. The Washington Post found 76 specific things he promised. There were probably a whole load more, to be honest. And since taking office, he said he's going to move fast and start acting on what he said he'd deliver.
Well, that's one promise he certainly has kept, because he's been moving at a very fast rate. He's signed several executive orders to an extent that if he keeps this up, he will massively exceed the number of executive orders President Obama signed when he was in office. And it's a little bit frustrating because Obama came under so much flak from the Republicans for the number of orders he was signing. And Donald Trump is seemingly doing it without criticism. But it's also pretty frustrating for us because this podcast simply cannot keep up with the number of orders he signed.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've picked five key promises, and he's actually already beaten us to it on one of them. We recorded a discussion with some guests on Tuesday. On Wednesday, at the time of recording, he's expected to announce some movement on it. So this promise is about restricting immigration, massively curbing the people coming into the country from areas of the world associated with terrorism, as he puts it. And he's expected to say that he's going to sign various executive orders on this, including one putting a freeze on the American refugee program.
So that's the foreign side of things. But domestically, Trump's made some big promises too. He said that he's going to bring back manufacturing jobs that have left the US for countries where labor is a lot cheaper. And he says as part of all of this, he's going to double the US's economic growth from around 2% to more than 4% a year.
Also on the domestic front, he wants to slay that kind of classic Republican bugbear, Obamacare, Obama's expanded public health care system. He's signed one executive order making some movement on that, but there's quite a lot more to do, particularly in Congress, and we want to look at whether he can actually do it.
And just days after the Chinese President Xi Jinping wowed delegates at Davos by promising that China would get tough on climate change, President Trump is saying that he's going to do the opposite. He wants to pull out of the UN climate change agreement that was signed in Paris recently, and he wants to pull out of a number of UN environmental programs as well.
So that's enough from us. Let's go to a discussion that we recorded on Tuesday with some great guests at Senate House in London.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sarah Churchwell. I'm the Chair of Public Understanding of the Humanities at the School of Advanced Study, University of London.
I'm Leslie Vinjamori. I direct the Center on Conflict, Rights and Justice at SOAS, and I'm an Associate Fellow of the US program at Chatham House.
Let's get started. Let's get into it, because Trump has made many, many promises, promises both, you know, before he took office and since taking office about what he's going to do. And I think the big one is repealing Obamacare. So, I mean, let's just ask the obvious question. How likely is this? Can you just repeal Obamacare?
Well, I'm afraid, at the risk of being a difficult guest, I am going to have to back up before answering that question, which is, I think the real question is, does he even want to keep his promises, if we're going to talk about this? Because he clearly made so many promises that he did not mean. He clearly has a long, you know, a lifelong track record of breaking whatever promises he makes in whatever ways suit him. So I think with every individual issue, you have to ask yourself first, did he really mean it? and then ask yourself, or did the people around him really mean it? And then ask, can it be done? I think in the case of Obamacare, they did mean it. I think certainly the Republicans do want to repeal it. The problem, of course, is that they don't have anything to put in its place, and 30 million Americans will be left uninsured if they try to repeal it overnight. In the specific case, without getting into too much technical detail, in the specific case of Obamacare, because it's tied up in all kinds of things that are actually beyond the immediate budgetary power of the GOP, which is what they're kind of invoking right now, it has to get passed by the Senate Democrats is the bottom line. And the Senate Democrats have said they will hold that line. And Schumer has said that's never going, that they're not going to support repealing Obamacare. So they, at the very best, they have a fight on their hands. And I think it's also becoming increasingly clear, even to them, that there is diminishing popular support for this.
I think that's exactly right. The standard was elevated quite dramatically by under President Obama's leadership. Americans didn't used to expect that they would have access to healthcare. There's long been a problem with this, a deficit in this area of public provision, and that's fundamentally altered. So the desire to repeal and replace runs into a hard brick wall, which is politics. There absolutely has to be some sort of provision in place. And remember that Trump's entire appeal has been to the people, right? And so to repeal a policy that takes care of working Americans or the unemployed is potentially devastating politically and to his primary campaign message. But I think the idea is to turn Obamacare, to create a policy that delegates us back to states and gives states choice. But how you actually do that, we don't have a plan in place. And so it becomes, as Sarah said, a very difficult exercise going forward.
But so it does have some level of mandate for it, of course, in that it was a kind of key campaign promise. He's just been elected on it. At the moment, Democrats are going to kind of hold the line against it. But do you think in future, if, say, there is more of a plan of what to replace it with, which is currently one of the big questions, Democrats might be persuaded to say, well, on the one, you know, firstly, this was voted for. Secondly, we've got a plan to replace it. Might you be able to chip off enough Democrat support there to get a repeal through?
Sure. I mean, I think there are a couple of important points here. One is the reason why it's known as Obamacare is because the GOP rebranded it that in order to try to make what was in fact a fairly popular and in many ways appealing looking solution to brand that as a failure. And there have also been people saying there are lots of Americans who seem to be under the impression that Obamacare failed and the ACA is the GOP version of it and that's what they'll get. So there's going to be all kinds of rebranding and blaming the other side that's going to happen anyway. But even Democrats and even people who are broadly in support of Obamacare, nobody thinks it's a perfect solution. Everybody knows it has problems. Everybody knows it has been expensive in some ways. It hasn't done all the things they wanted it to do. And many people on the Democrat side would say that that was because of the limits that the GOP put on it, so that they were already constrained in what they could deliver. So the fact is that I think that anybody who is a politician of principle, which seems, I'm sorry to say, as an American, to be a shrinking group, rapidly shrinking group on the Hill, but there are still some, will surely take the position that if there is a good system, and that's a very big if in my view, but if they can put forward a good system that really will care for people, then I think that anybody of conscience will vote for it. Because the goal here, surely, hopefully, is not to score political points, but to make sure that a good healthcare system is in place.
Only Congress can vote to repeal Obamacare, but we know that Donald Trump can do some fairly sneaky things to sort of send it into, you know, what's been termed as a death spiral. His executive order that he's issued, it's quite vague, but he's basically saying to federal agencies, you know, you can sort of reduce funding, right, for Obamacare. And there's bigger things that he can do that would really affect how Obamacare is. So ignoring Congress, because we know that some Republicans do not want to repeal it just yet, and we know the Democrats don't. Ignoring Congress, do you think Trump could sort of stick the knife into Obamacare without having anything there to really replace it?
Well, I think this is my primary concern. So the executive order that you referred to did suggest that there need be no further implementation if it entails more spending. And so, of course, this creates all sorts of dilemmas for a policy that hasn't fully been implemented, that has another year to go in terms of people subscribing. And so a lot of the devil will be in the detail of implementation when it comes to providing or suggesting an alternative plan. So there's all sorts of potential for chaos, uncertainty, and for real Americans, right, to really be hit hard by this.
So the second promise we thought we'd talk about is it's kind of evolved a bit, as many things do with Trump. It was sort of originally a plan to ban all Muslims from entering the United States. A lot of people pointed out that that was a slightly crazy suggestion.
It's also unconstitutional.
And unconstitutional. It's now become a plan to block immigration from areas associated with terrorism. I think we've got Trump talking about this idea.
We should only admit into this country those who share our values and respect our people. I call it extreme vetting. I call it extreme vetting.
So extreme vetting. I mean, there
no,
already
extreme,
was
quite, extreme,
extreme, extreme vetting.
Extreme vetting.
There already was, I mean, I suspect if you were an asylum seeker coming to the US, you might already say there was a fair bit of vetting already. How much can Trump add? What can he actually do that isn't unconstitutional, as we said, and isn't just plain stupid?
Well, look, first of all, he's trying to do all kinds of things that are unconstitutional. So let's not assume the Constitution is a bar, because he doesn't, as far as I can tell, he hasn't read it. He doesn't understand it. It doesn't seem to have any bearing on his words whatsoever. So, and then the question would be whether anybody else is going to hold him up to the standards of the Constitution. So in terms of extreme vetting, whatever that's supposed to mean, absolutely, you're right, of course, that has already been made very difficult for various constituencies to enter the country in ways that many of us find extremely disturbing and unethical. Can he legally do it? Yes, he can. Pragmatically, though, what would it look like? What happens when somebody's coming in the border and you're trying to ascertain what their values are? And the question is, how would they actually try to do it? And from what he's saying there, I think it sounds to a lot of people like a very strong code for we will try to limit people from various areas. And the part that's unconstitutional is banning them on the basis of religion. It is not unconstitutional in technicalities to ban them on the basis of where they come from, I don't think. And certainly that's the kind of thing that they could get, around.
This is another one of these areas where the move from being a president-elect and a campaigner to president-elect to actually president might lead to a change of rhetoric, a change of policy. This is a very difficult set of ideas to implement. As Sarah said, the idea that we can even agree, especially in the current context of what American values are, what we share, these are all up for contest and grabs at the moment. But remember, if Donald Trump and his cabinet make it a priority to restrict immigration and to try and target particular groups of people, they're going to run into all sorts of problems, tit for tat, perhaps, with other countries that might push back in very specific and concrete ways. Theresa May, who's going to be visiting Donald Trump on Friday, has already said that she's going to make one of her key agenda items to negotiate immigration deals, right? So the idea that the administration would take on bilateral negotiations on access and immigration, never mind the politics, it's extraordinarily time-consuming. This is an administration that has declined an offer to participate in Syria peace talks this week. Why? Because it's so busy with the transition. So I find it just difficult to imagine at the level of implementation. Nonetheless, this has been a popular set of ideas with his base. And so we have to watch this space and see, does he expand beyond his base? Because his popularity ratings are very low, 40%, maybe as high as 45% in the last few days. But these are not policies that are likely to resonate broadly with the American society. So Donald Trump, I think, is a sensitive man. He has an ego that needs to be taken care of. And when he sees that these are unpopular policies, I suspect that he might roll back some of them.
Yeah, and his own Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has made it very clear that he doesn't support a ban on Muslims. And that, I mean, the whole thing in general, for a president to block an entire class of people, that has never happened before. They might have blocked certain people from certain countries, but never sort of from so many countries and so many people. But to go back to something you were saying, Leslie, you mentioned that Theresa May is obviously coming over for a talk, and, you know, she managed to be the first leader to get to meet with the president.
It's very exciting. A special relationship.
You must be so
excited.
Proud.
We're fusing the special relationship right here.
One of the other things she has said, I think, that she wants to talk about, or she's under pressure to talk about, is climate change. Because, you know, Donald Trump has also said he wants to pull out of the Paris Agreement, and that he perhaps wants to back out of sort of other UN climate change plans. We were talking about he'll act in ways that will sort of boost his popularity. Is this something that would boost his popularity? And can he just, you know, decide actually the US is no longer going to be a leader on climate change?
I don't think this question is so much about popularity as it is about his power base rather than his voter base. And this is about, obviously, it's about big oil. This is very obviously about pleasing the big energy people represented by Tillerson, who he's decided to make the country's chief diplomat. So he has very clearly signaled that in his view, diplomacy is energy business. That's what it is. And so I think we're seeing here very, very straightforwardly an attempt to put through a series of policies that are not about currying favor with the voter, but are about making money for a kleptocracy in waiting, in my view. And so I think in terms of whether it would be popular or not, it will be unpopular with the people who already hate Trump's guts. They are, you know, it's one of the things that worries them the most about what he wants to do. I don't see a lot of indication that among his core voters in the Rust Belt and other areas that climate change is on their mind one way or the other. Although, you know, one might argue that it should be because it is one of the things that has led to the loss of the, you know, to the collapse of the steel industry and the collapse of their some of their industrial base. So, but again, you know, I think that another way to talk about what we've been saying in terms of the pragmatics of all of this, right? Can he pull out unilaterally out of the Paris Agreement? It's going to be hard to do, again, because of questions of tit for tat, again, because of the way that politics actually works. Can he stall and can he create chaos and can he create lots of problems along the way? Yes, he can. Can he create, you know, can he try to chip away at it and drag his heels? Yes, he can. But ultimately, I think one of the things that we're getting at here, and we'll all just have to see what happens, but and this kind of goes to this big question about fake news that everybody's debating as well. I have to believe in something called the reality principle. I have to believe that ultimately, whatever they say and whatever they try to make happen, there are certain things that are beyond their control that are happening, whether they like it or not. And climate change is one of those things. So whether this administration or another has to come to grips with it, they can only delay and defer and, you know, and stick their fingers in their ears and their head in the sands and pretend that it isn't happening for so long. Eventually, reality has to bite back. And my sense is that that's going to happen sooner rather than later in a Trump administration because they're trying to have a fantasy construction of everything. And it just won't work. I don't see how it can.
Yeah, the scary thing here, I think, of course, is that we saw President Xi of China standing up and really being the person, the potential global leader on questions of climate change and really putting America on the back foot because of the line that Donald Trump has adopted on climate change. But I think the room for optimism might be across the private sector in the United States. And there are many large corporations that have read the science very carefully, that understand the longer-term implications at the level of cost for themselves over time, and have begun to implement more proactively standards and policies that move them towards complying with some of the measures that are broadly contained within Paris Deal. So there's symbolically a huge step back with the election of Donald Trump on the question of America's leadership role in climate change, but there might still be some progress. Of course, this is tempered by his choice of appointment for the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, who's also been a climate science denier, which is very upsetting for those on the side of climate change. But nonetheless, it is a slightly more murky area because there are interest groups that are continuing to act proactively in very positive ways across the United States.
And we talked a bit there about whether climate change is the thing that's foremost in the minds of some of his kind of Rust Belt voters. Something that pretty unquestioningly was his focus on supposedly bringing back manufacturing jobs to America. He said it even in his inauguration speech. He said, buy American, hire American, which is something he'd also said on the stump.
While making his hats in China and Vietnam.
Exactly. Well, yes, indeed. And he's now got to start acting on that. A couple of first steps. He's already said he's going to withdraw from TPP. He's already put that in motion, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And NAFTA is something else he's talked about as well, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is with Canada and Mexico. TPP was kind of, it wasn't in force anyway, so he's pulled out of it. On NAFTA, if he wants to start sort of screwing with this deal or leave it outright, how much trouble is that going to cause? And can he actually do it?
Well, again, I mean, it's, we're going to sound like broken records because unfortunately with Trump, we're in a situation where all of the old rules have been thrown out. I mean, they really have been. That sounds, in any other circumstance, I would say, what, you know, what kind of hyperbole is that? But that is what is happening. And so the norms are being overturned. It's very, very difficult to know. And it's also important to say here that he has surrounded himself by a remarkably disparate and fractious group of internal advisors, many of whom pull in different directions. So it's hard to know which of them is going to have the ultimate authority, who's going to have his ear. Many reports are coming out that he says whatever the last person they spoke to said to him. So, you know, it sort of will depend on who can get the pen in his hand in order for him to sign whatever executive action they want him to sign. Can he unravel NAFTA? Yes, he can. Will it be easy to do so? No, it will not. Will it entail all kinds of much more, as Leslie rightly said, with all of these, the devil's in the detail. How will the politics actually work? What kind of, and this is very similar to actually the most obvious analogy to British listeners will be exactly the arguments that people are having about the single market and Britain negotiating a new set of terms for, on an individual basis for all of its trading partners. Can Trump bring protectionism back? Of course he can. We've had lots of protectionist presidents, and he's made it very clear that that is something that he wants to do. But that, again, is a different question from will protectionism deliver those jobs back to the Rust Belt? So he can create protectionist policies. He can, in my view, and I'm certainly not alone in this, he cannot suddenly, you know, revitalize the steel industry. He can't suddenly revitalize things. And of course, as many of us hold, and it seems to me very clearly the case, these jobs are gone not because of NAFTA or because of globalization. They're gone because of automation. They are gone because of digitization and because of computers. They are gone because all of those new capacities are taking the jobs that factory workers used to have.
Yeah, the idea that Trump can bring back the 4.5 million jobs in manufacturing that have been lost since
it's
around 1994 is not. Yeah, the economists don't seem to come out in support of this claim. Sarah is exactly right that a lot of these jobs are being lost to automation. They simply don't exist anymore. And of course, supply chains and production chains are completely integrated, or very highly integrated globally. So this would have a huge cost, right? Throwing up tariff barriers, protectionist measures will have a very high cost for companies within the United States and, of course, for consumers. But one question that's very much of interest to me is at what point will Donald Trump's base start to reconsider the arguments that are being made? So on his second or third day of office, saying that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is dead. Does that play? Is that enough? Or will there be an evaluation of what actually happens on the ground to their daily, you know, their living opportunities, their work opportunities, their cost of living? Or will these sort of very high profile measures be enough? And at what point will that run out?
And another thing he's promised, which is linked to the jobs thing, is to have economic growth of more than 4% a year. And that would be doubling how it is currently in the US. We've got a clip from one of his economic advisors, Steve Moore, saying how he thinks that that would be possible.
I think we get more, 1 percentage point more growth from the tax plan, just as Reagan did, Arthur. And I think we can get another percentage point growth out of energy production.
But he's also had Art Laffer advising him. You know, he's had some fairly, you know, senior economic advisors backing him. I mean, does that imply that maybe this 4% thing is possible? Trump is a businessman.
Well, come on. I mean, this whole argument about Trump being a businessman and therefore he's going to, you know, jumpstart the economy is so self-evidently spurious. And, you know, you have to actively and energetically disregard years and years of evidence of serial bankruptcy, of never paying his workers, of there's lots and lots of evidence to suggest, I mean, the FT has been running stories suggesting that he's, you know, been floated by Russian dark money. I mean, the idea that he's actually a successful businessman who's going to, you know, kind of single-handedly push a button and bring everything back is again as ludicrous as everything else that he says. Can some of his policies potentially jumpstart aspects of the economy? Yes, they can. I think the biggest one that people are talking about that I'm aware of that sounds at least, you know, minorly plausible is infrastructure. America does need investment in infrastructure. It has not had investment in infrastructure. Lots of important parts of the American infrastructure are crumbling. He, of course, wants to put private investment into that, not public investment into it, and so he wants to sell it off. But could that potentially jumpstart various kinds of industries? I think it could. I'm no economist. Whether it could do it to the tune of 4%, I doubt very much. But again, I'm not an economist.
And so one of the questions here, now remember that the American economy, given the 2008 financial crisis, is actually in pretty good shape. Unemployment is low. Jobs have been growing for the last 75 months. 2.5% growth rate is modest but good. But the real issue is inequality. The real issue is that 2.5% is not what most Americans are experiencing. 80% are experiencing no growth and 20% are experiencing about 5% growth, right? So the question is less whether or not Donald Trump can grow the economy and how he can redistribute those gains. And this is where there seems to be a real disconnect between what he's proposing and what's likely, whether he can actually achieve those. So corporate tax cuts, not clear to me how that leads to a redistribution of whatever wealth he manages to grow to, again, his base. Infrastructure, Sarah's absolutely right. That is something that America desperately needs. But if he does this through the private sector, will he grow the jobs that he wants for the people that he claims to be speaking for? It's just not clear. If he pulls back Obamacare, does he provide those benefits to the people that need them most through some sort of new healthcare plan? So again, the policies at the aggregate level sound nice if he can achieve them, and that's very suspect, but they don't go a long way towards redistributing and solving the problem of inequality in America.
So that was us in conversation with Leslie and Sarah. I'd like to thank them both for coming on the show. I'd also like to thank our long-suffering producer, Jordan, for coming with us to Senate House to record the podcast. Thank you as well to everyone who listened to us. Just a reminder that you can catch us every week on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Acast. Don't forget to subscribe to us if you haven't already, and do please give us that 5-star rating. If you can't wait till next week, you can visit us at newsweek.com or pick up a copy of Newsweek.